The bull case is that the Fed continues to lower rates, that consumers can start looking at mortgage rates as a result that are more approachable for them, and we start to see more home sales.
There is a bear case to be made. I mean, you have seen unemployment already start to tick up. And, you know, if that continues to increase without us creating jobs on the other side, you know, you could have a prolonged period where that middle class is unemployed while we shift into this structural change.
What markets, what investors have gotten wrong over the last couple of years is thinking that Fed policy was going to matter more than it did. And I think the bear case is actually this is the year that it does matter.
On this episode of Early Bird, what is the bull case and what is the bear case for the stock market in 2026? Joining us today on the podcast to discuss these topics are Michelle Connell, founder and chief investment officer at Porsche Capital, Adam Kunz, chief investment officer at Winthrop Capital Management, and Sean Lovison, founder and lead planner at Purpose Built Financial Services. If you're an investor looking to stay on top of the latest market trends, then you're listening to the right podcast. This is Early Bird, and I'm your host, Stephen Lerner. Before we get to today's discussion, let me tell you how you can save time and beat the market through Early Bird, a free daily email newsletter featuring commentary about the latest trends in stocks, cryptocurrency, and equity crowdfunding. Early Bird is designed to help individual and non-professional investors stay on top of all of the critical investing trends. The newsletter is 100% free and is sent to your email box each weekday morning. Subscribe to Early Bird for free at www.earlybird.email. Once again, that's earlybird.email. And now, today's discussion. 2026, could shape up to be an interesting year in the stock market. Some people predict that the S&P 500 could reach, on average, around 8,000. Big jump, similar to the past year we saw in 2025. But others are also predicting that we need to be a bit more cautious this year, especially if the macroeconomic conditions do not provide a good market for investors. So we've assembled a great roundtable again of experts to discuss what's in store for the stock market in 2026. Michelle, we'll start with you. Let's take a look at the macro picture. Let's start with the good news, I guess. What do you think is the bull case for the stock market in 2026? What would that look like?
The bull case is that the Fed continues to lower rates, that consumers can start looking at mortgage rates as a result that are more approachable for them, and we start to see more home sales. That would be nice because the consumer is a really big part of our GDP as a nation. And if you look underneath the surface last year, they were not so active. Consumer. If we had not had the AI investment that we had, GDP would have been a lot weaker. So if we have that, in fact, going forward, if deregulation continues to move forward as the current administration would like, we'd start to have more companies in several sectors do well, albeit financial. Technology also has been pushing for a lot of deregulation, healthcare and energy. So those two things would be great. And if GDP were to stay where it was last year, I think we had a lack of data at the end of the year. So I think we're estimating close to 2%, but the end of the year went out with something close to 4. If that were to continue, that's a very rosy scenario. I need to caveat that. The markets would be very happy, and all the current strategists that seem to think that next year is going to be the fourth year in the row of wonderful games, maybe it all come to fruition.
And if there is a good market in 2026, you're right, consumers will probably need to play a big part in that in some way, as well as those other points that you brought up. Adam, I want to ask you, if we look at the macro picture, let's focus on the bull case. What is the bull case for the stock market in 2026? What would need to happen?
Yeah, I think you need to see
stocks really kind of grow into the, I'm not going to say excess, but higher level valuations, you know, relative to historical averages. So I think we need to see revenue and earnings margins. We need to kind of tick up a little bit. That'll come from some productivity. I think you'll start to see companies still reducing headcount to some degree to help with margins. And I think if all of those things come together and you can sustain earnings growth, I mean, you got to look at earnings growth for the S&P expectations are 15% for next year. That's pretty high. So I think it's a high bar. And I think as long as you can hit that high bar, then we're okay. And I think the ingredients for that soup are going to be the middle class starting to kind of seeing more wind at their sail. We've, you know, really the last 3 years has been driven by, you know, a lot of people saying the K-shaped economy, which is, you know, largely true. And I think, you know, you've seen a lot of the luxury brands in the consumer sector, you know, really propped up by that, is that it's really that high end consumer that's really kept this up. And so I think we need to see that middle class. And I think there are a lot of steps being taken right now. I don't think enough people are talking about that, but I think there are some steps being taken right now in Washington that are trying to prop up the middle class. If that can happen without, and this is a big caveat right here, is if you can do that without creating inflation, excess inflation, then we would have another off to the races year. I think there are a lot of variables to that, so that makes it very difficult. I think your margin of error this year is higher than it's been in quite some time. I think we'll probably be positive. I think things will probably work out okay, but I think in order to have another year like we've had the last few years, I think you need a lot of things to happen the right way in the right time. That's difficult, so I think you just got to kind of pay attention, be nimble. And if that all comes together, then yeah, we would be, you know, like I said, off to the races.
Yeah, we'll have to keep an eye on policy out of Washington, interest rates, and what impact that might play on consumers and how they could impact the market. Thanks, Adam. Sean, what look at the bull case for the stock market in 2026. What does that look like?
I just want to, you know, follow up and continue on what you were just talking about with that middle consumer and deregulation out of Washington. You know, they just, one of their bills they already tried to do to help with the permitting failed, which was the Energy Permitting Reform Act. But, you know, that was going to reduce permitting from, you know, 7.5 years to a maximum of 2. And that was really aimed at increasing construction jobs and infrastructure around specifically energy. But like all of those infrastructures, you know, all those jobs in construction tend to benefit these middle consumers that we're all kind of talking about and hoping, expand in the market and help spend more money. So I don't think this is the last attempt that Washington's going to have. And I really do think there is going to be some kind of reform, because I think that Washington and the higher level federal government understands that we have to get some rid of some of the NIMBYism that's stopping permitting at the local level. And we need to get some of these projects moving if we're going to compete with larger, foreign powers such as China that are really, you know, building things quicker than we are. And I do think that that's going to help out the, you know, the construction industry in the United States and that middle consumer. I think additionally, in terms of how we fund that stuff is, you know, I haven't seen a whole lot of people talking about this, but the supplementary level, like leverage ratio, which is just a metric that they have for how much banks have to keep on hand for reserves, has already been decreased by about 27%. And that's actually going to be able to be implemented right now in January. And they're estimating that could put over $200 billion into play to be invested in the United States. So all of those, I hope, flow down to jobs for the middle, you know, consumers we're talking about.
Yeah, this is interesting. It turned into a good policy discussion. It seems like a common variable between what the bull case will look like from all three of you is what the consumer does in 2026 and the role the consumers will play in the market. Let's take a look at the reverse. There could very well be a bear market this year. So let's start with that. Sean, let's look at the macro picture. What is the bear case for the stock market in 2026?
I hate being a pessimist, right? I try to stay optimistic as possible, you know, keep my clients optimistic as possible, because we hate to, you know, dig a hole in the ground and stick our heads in there. You know, but there is a bear case to be made. I mean, you have seen unemployment already start to tick up. And, you know, if that continues to increase without us creating jobs on the other side, you know, you could have a prolonged period where that middle class is unemployed while we shift into this structural change. And if the AI implementation happens faster than we can get these projects off the ground to increase infrastructure, then you have a really depressed consumer market. I'm also worried about just tariffs. You know, they still are saying, you know, Goldman Sachs did a survey and only, you know, a certain percentage of those tariffs have actually been passed along to the consumers in 2025, but that's going to increase to over 70% of the tariffs in 2026. That is a strong driver of price increases that takes more of that discretionary spending away from the consumer. So those are my two of my larger concerns about the economy at a macro level.
Tariffs, absolutely. And all these policy issues, you're right. These are issues that could dampen what could be a potentially a good market this year, but we'll have to see. Michelle, let's take a look at the macro picture. We talked a bit about the bull case before earlier in the show. Let's again stay on the bear case. What is the bear case for the market in 2026? What does that look like?
I think Sean brought up my concerns as well. Jobs, first of all, there was a survey out recently. I don't know the range or the size of the companies, but 6 out of the 10 companies that were surveyed said that they plan on laying off employees this year. The excuse that was given was AI. And I use the word excuse. Maybe it's just time to clean house, right? I don't know. But that's very concerning if, in fact, those type of job losses do come into play. I'm also concerned about tariffs, because you saw at the end of the year, a lot of the technology companies had worked through their inventory that they had bought before the tariff increases. Mm-hmm. And now they're talking about passing those on. That's one particular instance of potential tariff being an impact on the consumer. So if that happens, I think the Federal Reserve is going to have a really hard time lowering rates more than once or twice, and the market is kind of building in three rate reductions. So those are my concerns: jobs, tariffs, and interest rates.
The big three: jobs, tariffs, interest rates. They could help the market potentially, but they could also hurt the market in 2026. Adam, when we spoke just a few minutes ago about the bull case, you were foreshadowing a little bit about, you know, where the market could go in a not good place for 2026. What is your bear case for the market? What should we be looking for?
Yeah, well, unlike Sean, I love being a pessimist. So, I think you got to look at, I think policy matters, as everyone kind of said here. And in particular, I think what investors have gotten wrong over the last couple of years is thinking that Fed policy was going to matter more than it did. And I think the bear case is actually this is the year that it does matter. And I think you got to look at the fact that Powell's out. You're going to have a lame duck for the next several months. And I think there's this thought that you're going to get this pacifist in there that's going to just do whatever, you know, the Trump administration wants to do. And let's play out that scenario. I think that's your worst case scenario, is if you have someone come in and they aggressively reduce short-term rates. I think that's the worst thing for the markets, because number one, that will do absolutely nothing for consumer rates. Mortgage rates will probably go up in that scenario because they'll be afraid that inflation will tick up. Credit cards won't do anything. The only thing it'll change is the overnight bank lending rate. And I think that's what a lot of people don't really understand about when they say, because, you know, most media just says the Fed's lowering rates. They don't really get into the weeds, and I understand why not. But all they're doing is they're reducing the Fed rate, which is the overnight lending rate. It doesn't necessarily change long-term rates. So if they're too aggressive there and they don't do anything with the balance sheet, they don't do anything to try to preserve long-term interest rates, I think you might have the market scared that there's going to be excess inflation, the Fed's going to be stuck, and the market is not going to like that scenario. The market doesn't like a scenario where the outcomes are really difficult to put probabilities on, to, you know, make expectations and make calls. And that is the scenario that makes that really difficult. To play kind of go down the micro scale, I agree that another scenario or just limitations with the infrastructure around AI, I think that is the thing that enough people aren't paying attention to, is that there can be all the demand in the world, but if we can't build it out in an economical way, then who cares? And I think, you know, some of those scenarios where people start to ask those questions will increase volatility. And then the third thing is just at the end of the day, you know, there are growing uncertainties throughout everywhere. You know, geopolitical issues haven't gone away. We seem like we're coming to some resolutions, but we have all of these little tinderboxes around the world. And if just, you know, if just one of them go off, we're okay. But if we had a, you know, this kind of correlation effect, and that's always what creates these big, you know, so-called black swan events, is when you see correlation of multiple different things happening, then that's when everything starts to unwind. It's not because of one thing. It never is one thing. The OA crisis was not one thing. It was this correlation of things. And so I think that there are a growing number of those. And that's what I'm going to go back to, kind of one of my overall themes, is that the margin of error is the slimmest it's been in a decade right now. Doesn't mean it's going to pop or anything's going to go down. Just your margin of safety is really limited right now. So I think you want to be careful just because of that. You don't want to move out of markets. Just be careful.
Yeah, it is the margin of error. Well said, Adam. Just looking at the market right now, and one little thing could make a big difference in the coming year. To wrap up this episode, I want to shift gears, change topics just a little bit. Each of you, just wanted to ask, in 2026, is there some type of under-the-radar stock or alternative that investors should maybe keep an eye on? For example, in last year, silver came out of nowhere in the fourth quarter and had finished the year at an all-time high, and it was a tremendous growth. So I'll ask each of you if there's an under-the-radar stock or some alternative investment that maybe investors should keep an eye on for 2026. Adam, I'll start with you. Anything under the radar in terms of the stocks or alternatives that you think you might want to suggest investors watch out for in the coming year?
Yeah, I've been dying to say it. It's the most boring thing I could say, but as primarily a fixed income guy, I think you want to pay attention to fixed income this next year. And I've kind of hit on it, what the Fed's going to do. Mm-hmm. I actually don't think the Fed's going to be that radical and just lower short-term interest rates. I think that you will see some form of QE this next year. And I know that term gets thrown around way too much, but the reality is, over the last several years, the Fed has been letting mortgage-backed securities run off of the portfolio. At the same time, banks have not been buying them either. And like I said, most people don't pay attention to MBS. I get it. They don't pay attention to bonds in general. But the spreads on mortgage-backed securities are wider than corporate bonds right now, much wider. And the reason for that is that there's no natural buyer. If Trump, the Fed, want to lower interest rates out the curve, if they want to create some relief for buyers of homes, the way to do it is to start buying mortgage-backed securities again. And if they started doing that, you would see spreads collapse. And what that does, for those viewers or listeners that don't understand, is that credit spreads are kind of similar to yield. So as they go down, the price of the security goes up. So right now, just to kind of give an example, spread on an Apple 30-year is below 50 basis points, I mean, you're getting half a percent more on an Apple bond than you would a U.S. Treasury. If you were to go out and buy a fairly current coupon MBS bond, you're going to get more than twice that. So you're going to get 100 basis points over a treasury. And the reason is, like I said, there's no one really buying it because banks have stepped away, the Fed stepped away. And over the last 10 years, most of the time you're seeing MBS trade at 10 to 20 basis points over a treasury. So there's a lot of room there. So I know it's not exciting. I know it's not sexy, but I think a Fed moving back into buying mortgage-backed securities, like I said, I think you can wait, see if they make that move. But if they start moving in that direction, I think you'll see spreads and collapse there. You'd see the outperformance of that. And like I said, you're collecting 5 to 6% right there in the MBS market, that if you're just looking for tried and true kind of protective cash, that's the place to be.
Okay, so mortgage-backed securities you talked about. Cool, interesting. Sean, any under-the-radar stock or alternative real quick that investors should watch for in 2026?
Yeah, I'll start with something that throws a bone to Adam and the pessimists out there. And it goes along the lines of the, inflation risk and almost stagflation that Adam was kind of talking about there. And it's something that was really, really hot right after COVID. And then people are not talking about it anymore. And that's tips. Like the rate on tips went up to about 9% when inflation was really hitting post COVID, and everybody was rushing into I bonds and tips. And, right now, most of my clients are like, why am I in these things again? Because the rates have fallen so much lower. And I really just think that, you want to have some portion of your fixed income allocated to tips still in case we end up in this worst case scenario that, we're talking about here, where the rates get pushed artificially low and that drives up inflation. Yeah. So I want my clients to protect themselves with at least some portion of their bond portfolio inside of tips still, though they're questioning why right now. But just to end on one high note though, I'm sorry, Adam. I'm sorry, Steve. Go ahead.
Real quick, were you going to say one more thing beyond the tips?
Yeah, well, I just want to end with something more positive, and that's Mitsubishi Electric is the last company I would say that, I would recommend as someone that's below the radar, just because they are so involved in infrastructure and energy grids. Mm-hmm. So that's one with combines with the infrastructure discussion we've talked about and international outperformance.
Okay, another good pick. Thank you. All right. Great picks, everybody. Michelle, you're going to close us out right now. Close out this episode. Under the radar stock, alternative that investors may want to look at this year. Anything, feel free to name one.
Two areas. I still like commodities in general, but I have some friends that are specialists in the mining area, and they're starting to short some of the miners, which I find interesting because of the financials or lack of financials for some of the precious miners. So let's see how those particular commodities or precious metals do next year. There may be a hiccup in that particular space. And on a positive note, IPOs. I mean, I hope that we start to see more of them actually come to fruition next year. If we do, that means that the enthusiasm continues. If we don't and the companies pull back and don't file, that means that enthusiasm has waned and there's a little bit more concern and pessimism for technology and AI. So those are the two areas that are kind of under the radar for me.
Thank you again to Michelle Connell, Adam Coons, and Sean Loveson for sharing your insights on stocks. And thank you to everyone for listening to today's discussion. We'll be back next week for another episode of Early Bird. Have a great day.